You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
How are you making it work in LA, and what is the outlook to you for restaurants that you seem to have the golden touch?
I think it's details. You got to everything. You got to watch your food costs. You got to watch your labor. You got to treat your staff well. You know, that's a big thing. It's really about building that right culture inside of your business as well. And, you know, just like focusing on making sure the quality of the product is always good. It to be successful, you have to be good at almost at everything nowadays. You have to be a good marketer. You have to have a great product. You have to be good. You have to be a great operator. Right. And those are the things that you can't just be good at one thing anymore. You got to be able, because even if you were just had a great product, but had terrible customer service, there's so much competition out there that we're just going to go and find something else.
Yo, welcome to another episode of In a Minute with Evan Lovett, coming to you live from the IM Studios in the heart of LA. Right now, the heart of LA is right down the street where Lawrence Longo, today's guest, owns Prince Street Pizza, which now through at least December 21st, is going to be Little Nero's Pizza. And no, this isn't an ad. This isn't a sponsored. But if you've seen it, and I know you've seen it, if you've been on the internet or any social media anywhere, because, and I hate this word, this is the most viral thing I've seen of a positive nature in 2026. They turned Prince Street into Little Nero's Pizza. So we're going to get into that. But first, I just want to say thank you, Lawrence Longo, for coming on. It's not just Prince Street. Lawrence is a food entrepreneur going back to his days with Off the Menu. But now he's talking about instrumental in LA. Not only the Prince Street Pizza, we got Burgers Never Say Die, Tacos 1986, Bars Next Door, and my favorite, Patty Melt in Los Angeles, Irv's Burgers, also legendary burger. Did I miss any?
Nope. I got an ice cream company that's going to be coming out, but it's Bar Next Door, which is...
What did I say?
I think you said Bars Next
Door. Bar Next Door, yeah. Though. Yeah. So anyway.
Only one, but I want to have more.
Which is legit. There. Sunset Strip, by the way. And it's beautiful. And my wife and I had a date night there and it was awesome.
Yeah.
Which is also right next door to Prince Street, by the way, which gives me another reason to eat. Yes, my favorite LA pizza, Prince Street, even though I know its origins are in New York, but I've in love Prince Street, but go on.
Some of those I'm investors in, and others like Irv's Burgers and Prince Street Pizza and Bar Next Door, I'm the operating managing partner, and you know, so. But yeah, I love food. I love getting involved with it. I had more money, I'd invest in more things.
Guys, instrumental in LA, and listen, going back to Burgers Say Die, some say it's the pioneer of the smash burger. Prince Street, I know LA Pizza's had this big movement. I get it. I respect it. But Prince Street is still the best in the game. And judging by the lines, a lot of you guys think so too. But here's the thing with Lawrence. He's a great dude. He's passionate. He's there. He's hands-on. It's not like this investor that's just putting money in. So he's a real dude. So I'm excited to get into it, man. Lawrence, first, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks. I'm a huge fan. I mean, I love everything you do. I love the history of stuff. I've always wanted to do like the history of food.
Yeah.
Because it's so interesting, like, you know, that just where things come from.
Yeah.
The Sicilian style of pizza. It was poor for poor people in Sicily. It was fried dough that they would put over the leftover ingredients on it and serve it in the street. It was a street food, like the Sicilian style pizza that we serve. But yeah, man, I just love food. Like,
yes,
you can, when I
do,
when I talk about it, I get so excited. My staff loves going to eat with me because I just like order everything on the menu and I just I'm like that old Italian grandmother. I just want everyone to eat.
That's the right. That, dude, what do they say? Best way to a man's heart is through his stomach, right?
Absolutely.
So you got two of us up here. And before we really dive in, I got to give a shout to our sponsor, our proud, awesome sponsor, Ardo Brick, going on 60 years, third generation LA American dream story, manufacturing and jobs down in Gardena. I've been down to the factory. It's a great place. They do these tiles and these bricks by hand. This is high-end stuff. My wife's an interior designer. When I first connected with Ardo Brick, she was like, Ardo Brick, wow, they do such a high-quality, handmade right here in LA job, and they do historic legacy monuments, the bricks on Alvarez Street, the whole under the archway at Plaza de Cultura, Artes Mariachi Plaza. So Ardo Brick, thank you for being a great sponsor and congrats on 60 years. But let's get back to Lawrence Longo and let's dive in with Little Nero's Pizza, which my family and I have been to multiple times. First couple times, I was like, damn, this is crazy. It's still crazy. Tell us what this is, because somehow Prince Street Pizza transformed into Little Nero's from Home Alone, including the actual car, which is pretty awesome. Go.
So I want to also like say that like this has been done before, maybe not to the level that we've done it, but like in Chicago, like certain restaurants were like recreating Little Nero's and doing like kind of like activations like that. Never fully, I think, really approved by Disney. I think it was one of those things or Fox that they were like, let it go, you know, like, but, you know, and before the pandemic, my friend Scott from it's no longer LBK Pizza down the road on Tonga.
People used to love LBK. Yeah, I had some loyalists. Yeah,
yeah, they did a Little Nero's activation 1 year, and it was quite busy. Wasn't to the magnitude that we did.
Yeah.
And I remember when he closed down, he said you should do it, and many people have said to me you should do Little Nero's, and I was like, you know, I'm too big to do it without.
You can't do gorilla version. Yeah,
everybody
was
gorilla versioning it, so it didn't really get the virality we did. Like, it happens by, you know, telling the right story with the right partners involved and really getting really into it. But Disney's agency, Callan, called us up and said, hey, I did the square SpongeBob SquarePants, not to like talk about other things, but
the
SpongeBob, it's 25th year anniversary.
Yeah.
And they came to me to create a collaboration for them based off of the Krabby Patty.
I
created the Krabby Patty.
Right. I do.
Okay. I created the Krabby Patty collab, and I got about 250 chefs and restaurants across the world to recreate the Krabby Patty. And this was Paramount's most successful out-of-the-box marketing campaign ever. It did billions of impressions. And, you know, it's there in order to get that virality, and, you know, you have to have the right product, you have to tell the right story, and then you got to hit the right audiences. And that's the recipe to really go viral. It's not as easy as I just said, but
I don't know if it is just having the right audience and all that. Cause I want to reaffirm, and like, this is what's funny. This is what I like about you. You have this business mind, right? Like your impressions and virality and activations and all these like buzzwords and keywords, which are true and necessary that you need to understand. But at the end of the day, Prince Street Pizza is fucking great pizza. And I love like, and by the way, at the Little Nero's, you can still get
any of our pizzas. I said that it can't be just cheese pizza. If I'm
which is benefit- what we did, or my son absolutely wanted to order the plain cheese pizza though. But go on. But you could still get the Prince Street stuff, which again is the best pizza in LA and possibly anywhere, in my opinion.
Well, because at the end of the day, I'm a neighborhood pizza joint. I'm a premium neighborhood pizza joint.
Totally.
And at the what it all comes down to is the product. The product has to, in anything, your product has to be amazing. And then people will talk about it. That's the easiest way to market anything. It's having a great product, right? So yeah, Prince Street, we're fortunate enough, you know, we go viral a lot. Like when we open up a new city, it's like
it's
all
deal.
Over TikTok. It's all over, you know, so.
Not quite an in and out opening in Nashville type big deal, but no, just kidding. But yeah, it's still huge though. Yeah.
We don't get the 3 day lines. We get the 4 hour lines, but at the same time, I don't want people to wait in line very long. I want my line to go fast. I can tell if an operator is a good operator or a bad operator by how quickly their line goes. So some people in LA.
Yeah.
You might think they have long lines.
Yeah.
They're actually bad operators because I sit there and I watch and they're slow and they do things. And listen, I think Todd Graves said this once. He said, quality over speed. Okay. Make sure it comes out quick or good before quickly.
Yeah.
Right. And so I take totally that's a way to have it. But yeah, it comes down to great product. And so I did the Krabby Patty collab.
Yes.
I picked great restaurants. That thing went great. So Disney called us and asked us if we could activate it. So I'm not only a restaurateur and operator. I also understand because I do big festivals and I do other things. So I'm ready for that type of volume. Most, if most pizzerias got that volume, they'd collapse. They wouldn't even know what to do.
I got it. Listen, I asked a question. We're going to get back, but I got to interrupt because you're talking about the volume. And I will say this. The line has for 10 days now, 8 days been to the end of the block. It's this Ventura Place, right? Isn't it right off Ventura, which by the way is somehow turned into one of the coolest little areas in the city. Plug Studio City for real.
The best street, one of the best streets in LA. And like, it's awesome. Tell me if I'm wrong. It's got the best food.
Yeah.
It feels like you're almost in Europe.
Gelato, walkable. Even me, Mr. Car Advocate, you know we walk around there. Give credit for that.
Who turned that street around? Ooh. Joan McNamara.
Joan's
on Third. She was the first one that saw that street and put a flagship down there, right? She was the one that had the first good restaurant there.
Because it was a big five. And look, we shot big five, but it was basically big five and like other stuff. I couldn't even tell you
There was a shoe repair store.
Was it like a balloon store, dry cleaner? But now it's like a destination when we go. Baccio e Latte,
McConnell's,
Tuning Fork,
Alfred's,
all this stuff. And it's like, people are coming from other places. And I'm always tickled by that. Like, we met somebody from Burbank. We met somebody from Eagle Rock. We had somebody that came from West Adams. I'm like, and you're coming to Studio City, huh? And this is before the Little Nero's. And so circling back to that real quick, two things. One, the volume that you're getting is incredible, but it does move. The line does move. And here's what I noticed. I went in the kitchen and the staff is legit, like, in a good mood and festive. And I've been in a lot of restaurants. You don't see that, especially when there is that volume and that kind. So, a shout out to your staff. And I'm not just saying this because they were awesome. Liner, is it Linette or Liner?
Liner.
Call them Liner. Okay.
Liner.
So, Liner, I guess, is the manager?
He's a GM.
Okay. He was a GM. Dude, he had it under control. People move, but people happy. And you see people working hard in every restaurant, every good restaurant for sure. But people were like happy. And I was like, this is a really impressive operation. Cause I'm always there. And Lawrence will attest. I go there a lot. It's my son's favorite piece to do.
His picture's on the wall.
Yeah. with my son?
It's going to be, your picture's going to be on the wall.
Yes. Check it out. Shout out. Thank you. But, we go there a lot, but it's a well-run operation, most importantly. So you were ready to handle this volume and the food. The pizza's great, but here's the thing that you got to realize. If you haven't seen it yet, for some reason, every single detail is magnificent. Like, did Disney set it up? Tell me how this came together. Because the inside of the restaurant, like the walls, the carpet on the floor, the boxes, and of course, outside, it looks like, look, jacket, hat, they have the car from Home Alone. How did this come together?
Yeah, the details are so important. I have to hand it off to the Disney Plus and Callan team and just all of us working together on making it the most perfect experience. They went above and beyond from the details of, if you guys read the newspapers, they're like newspapers from the Home Alone. Like, oh my God, the details are beyond.
I missed that. And I'm a newspaper guy. Guess we got to go back.
It goes beyond. And like I said, if you're going to do anything, you got to do it right.
Yeah.
And from the car to all the way to the carpet on the floor, they asked me, can you change anything? I said, if you put it back to the way it was, you can change anything. Wow. Because if I was going to be that restaurateur, it's like, no, you can't do this or you can't do that. This. It's not going to be the full experience. You have to go. If you're going to do anything, go all the way.
Yep.
Yeah. That's like anything in life. I think that's really what you got to do.
Okay. So that's enough plug for a little thing. Because I know you're going to go and I'm going to be back. But again, it really is like one of these things. And in fact, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm on KNX every Friday. Shout out Odyssey. Thank you. Distributing the podcast. But one thing to do in LA this weekend, absolutely go to Little Nero's, aka Prince Street, because it is cool. And I've texted my friends. Go see. Okay. So that's
enough. We extended it for 4 more days.
There you go. Stay tuned through the 21st, right?
21st.
Yep. Okay. Now, you said go all the way with it. Do it right. I mean, you could tell with your energy and your passion that that's how you live. Your list of restaurants, they're all notable, very notable LA spots. Where did it all begin? I know you're from Toronto. I know you were a hockey player. Give me the origin story of Lawrence Long.
How deep do we want to go? I grew up in Italian family.
And by the way, this is why he's so nice. He's Canadian, by the way. He's intense, but I mean, come on. Yeah. Go on. Yeah.
I got a little bit of a Canadian edge, a little bit of an East Coast edge, but I like to have fun. I played hockey my whole life, grew up very
competitive, high level.
Oh, yeah. I won Canadian championships. I played for Team Canada when I was 14 years old, won a gold
position.
Center, mainly center.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, as I was younger, I scored a lot of goals, but as I got older, I became more of a defensive. And if you ask anyone who plays hockey with me, they do not like me. I do anything to win.
Yeah.
Anything. Yeah.
Competitive. I could see it.
To win.
Wait, who were your players? Who were your idols?
Wayne Gretzky and Doug Gilmore.
Doug Gilmore.
Yeah.
I collected hockey cards, of course.
Yeah.
Maple Leafs.
And
think they took out the Kings and like.
No, we didn't. Don't even bring that up. It's all 1993.
Was that the Kings took them out? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
That's how we went to the Stanley Cup. Was that the year the Kings went to the Stanley Cup?
Yep. Against the Montreal Canadiens. Wayne Gretzky, high stick, Doug Gilmore, didn't get a penalty, scored a hat trick. Yeah, I know.
Come on. It's Gretzky, bro.
I agree. So anyways, yeah, hockey player growing up. I played for York University in college. Wow. And then my college went on strike and I got meningitis.
Time out. Your college went on strike? Students?
The teacher assistants went on strike. There was no, they were basically, you could come to school or you don't have to. And I was like, this is weird.
And that gave you meningitis?
No. That gave me meningitis. No, in the same year, I got meningitis. And, you know, when I was playing hockey, I don't want to make excuses. I wasn't good enough for the size I was. I'm 5'8".
Okay.
At that time in the NHL, you had to be 6 footer. They didn't even sniff you. So I was getting into, I started being an actor. This is so funny. On a hockey TV show in Canada, and I forget the name of the show, I was an extra, like a skilled extra, but I was making like $500 or $600 a day playing hockey on a TV show. And I was like,
I'm not going pro, but this is damn good.
Yeah, 18 years old. I was like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And but what I got the bug, the entertainment bug. And I read an article about these guys, these executives led by Jerry Bruckheimer, who play hockey in LA while they also make movies and do all these really cool things. And I was like, oh man, imagine I could move to LA, play hockey with these guys and like get into the movie business. Yeah. So I took when my university went on strike, I moved to LA and I went to the New York City Film Academy to study filmmaking.
In LA. Where is that?
At Universal Studios.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it still?
It's called the New York Film Academy at Universal Studios. Okay. I think it's a pretty like, whatever, big film school. I went there and I told my dad, I said, I'm never moving. I'm staying here. And I ended up figuring out my way, to, you know, and I got a job working for the president of Silver Pictures.
Wait, where'd you live first? I always love this.
It was called the Barham Apartments. It's right at Barham.
Like in the little shortcut, one of the coolest like shortcuts in all of LA. But
yeah, right across from Universal Studios, there's a big apartment complex. Yeah. It's been changed, but it was called,
was your first place, huh?
Then I lived in a backyard in West Hollywood.
Hold on. And I want to get your story, but just give me your first impressions of LA. Obviously you call your dad and you're like, I've never come back, but what was it? Why'd you fall in love with LA?
It was actually very sad the first couple of years, but I want to win.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to be successful. I wanted to make it happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very lonely and you don't know people and you're a broke guy, like who wants to like hang out in cool spots. That nobody wants a broke guy hanging out in cool spots in LA. I remember having a girlfriend and I would drop her off at the club, say, I'll pick you up later. Like that's how much of a loser I was.
Wow.
But okay. It was, you know, but that's what it takes, right? You want to do something different. And that's where I lived. But the weather was great. You know, the energy was good. Like in LA at that time, no matter what, you're always around the corner of being successful.
Yes.
In LA, that hope could happen at a bar. It could happen at
the American dream, man.
At a bus stop. It could happen anywhere and you could feel that energy. And I just knew that, you know, I wanted to be here and I started playing hockey and little by little, guess what? I ended up, my best friends are those guys from that GQ article in that magazine today. that group I still play hockey with, and they're still my closest friends. So, you know, it really, I wanted to come here to be a producer. I say I was a failed producer. I mean, I did some cool things in the movie business.
Yeah.
I worked for the president of Silver Pictures, who just left the Warner Brothers to start his own company. And so I really learned there about like that content is king.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, one of my best friends growing up was Michael Eisner's son. Okay. We played hockey together in LA. I say growing up in LA. And I remember him once saying to me that content's king, no matter what. Great content is the key to success.
Absolutely.
And that really stuck home to me no matter what I was doing, because, you know, as I was in the comic book world, or I produced Spaceballs, the animated series for Mel Brooks.
Really?
Yeah, I did 15 episodes.
Okay.
You know, and I learned how to produce. And, you know, at the end of the day, you see that a lot of people in Hollywood become successful in other things because it is the hardest business to become successful in.
Hell
Hollywood.
Yeah.
Especially back then, in that, you know, it was really like you had to have thick skin. I saw things that like today you'd never see.
Right.
Like happened. Like I would get plates thrown at me, lunches thrown at me if I got the wrong lunch ready, like crazy, you know, crazy Hollywood stories. But so I worked my way up through that. You know, ended up being, I call myself like a failed movie producer because I never really got anything made, really. You know, I made some TV shows and sold some TV shows, and, you know, and then I started working at a social media marketing company, and that's, it was only Twitter was around, and it was a company called TwitMob. And it was really weird because I didn't know what an influencer was, but this kid who started this company was like, it would be like, how would you like to be the most popular person in high school for a day? We can make that happen. And the way we do that is we get 15 people with big followers on Twitter to talk about the same thing at the same time. And what that does is it creates a virality of like everybody their whole audiences are talking about it. So what they use me for is I'd go set them up with all the movie studios, and I would be like, hey, opening day, I can make your movie the most talked about movie when it opens. And we do that by getting all these influencers to talk about the movie.
Mob, yeah.
So that was called, it was called Twit Mob. And then
this is 08, 09-ish, somewhere around.
Yeah, it was very, then Instagram came and we were like, holy, this is big. And I forget what it went from Twit Mob to, I forget what the name of the company was, but anyways, it was one of those social media market. What did we call ourselves? And, but that's what taught me about kind of social media and that. And, at that time,
revolutionized everything, man.
I got an email saying, hey, we're creating an app. We want to get you, the influencers, you know, to create their own apps on this platform. I was like, screw the influencers. I know. I have an idea for an app. I just sold a TV show called Off the Menu.
Wow.
And it was about curating secret menu items across North America.
Yeah.
And what I did was I used that app platform and I plugged in all these pictures and all this data of all these, like I became obsessed with secret menu items.
Yeah.
So when I was working for my boss, he went to Spago and ordered a smoked salmon pizza. I was like, how the hell did you know to order that? It's not on the menu. He's like, well, Wolfgang Puck would bring this out for people like celebrities. Yeah. And it was like his flex being like smoked salmon pizza. And it was like the first like off the menu secret menu.
I didn't know that was off the menu. I knew he was famous for that, and that like changed California pizza. Like, but I didn't know it was an off the menu.
It was launched as an off menu item, a secret menu item.
Okay.
And then obviously I understood the story about In-N-Out, which a lot of people don't know why it's called Animal Style. And do you know?
Go. Yeah. Tell it.
So basically, when they had their first location in Baldwin Park, all the surfers at the end of the day, they would come into the parking lot, they would eat their burgers, and they would make a mess. And the staff would call them the animals.
Right.
And one day, one of the animals came by at the end of their shift, and he saw the chef making grilled onions, mustard on the patties, like, you know what I mean, extra sauce. And he was like, what's that? He's like, next time you come, all the staff would make the animal style burgers at the end, like, because they wanted to make different things.
Uh-huh.
And they said, ask for it animal style. and all the surfers. And that's the beginning, word of mouth. It was unbelievable product, great story. And that's how the Animal Style started at In-N-Out. So I started becoming with obsessed because a secret menu item is more than just like, oh, it's not on the menu. It's not just more than a flex. There's a story behind it. How did that story exist? And I was a content guy. So I was like, what a great idea for a TV show. Now people have I sold it and people stole it and it is what it is. But from that, I created an app. And I was like, I can hold all these secrets and democratize secret menu items to the world by having this app. So I called my friend who was a publicist. Shout out to Rachel Krupa, who's one of the best people. Yeah. And she, I guess, put it out there. And all of a sudden, like, my app went viral in a way. And people would download the app. And I had like 100,000 downloads. And then I was like, holy shit, now I'm a startup company that's a tech company.
Yeah, were you still with TwitMob's new iteration or that? You saw this app, you saw this, and right away you're like, I'm doing that, I'm diving, investing your own money, like building the app? Who did development? I mean, it's not just like you can have an app overnight.
No, I built it overnight.
Yeah.
A rudimentary form of it.
You? To get like it, you like coding and developing?
Well, that was the beauty about the app. It was already coded. All you had to do was upload pictures. And I had an assistant that did most of the uploading.
Okay.
But it was very easy to do. That was the whole idea of this app, is that anybody could have an app. And I launched off the menu, and then I raised money.
Yeah.
But I'm not like a raise money kind of guy. I'm also not a tech guy. I'm like, at the time I was like a content producer guy or a connector guy. Like,
right.
I was, you know, the reason why I was able to invest in restaurants and things like that was because I helped my friend who had an online art business get into TJ Maxx. He's now probably one of the largest selling wall decor vendors in TJ Maxx.
Okay.
I was a hustler. Like, there is a drink called Activate. I got Activate drinks, which the vitamin went into the cap. You twist the vitamin, it goes into the drink.
Yeah.
I was bringing that into Canada.
It's like Ramune minus
celebrity seating. I was just hustling whatever I could do to stay afloat. And then I put all my effort into off the menu. And that's when I learned about the food business.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100 plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hold on. And I want this transition, but off the menu, how many places have secret menus?
Well, any and all can have secret menus. Right. So I was like saying, yo, you should create a secret menu item. Like, we were responsible for a lot, like, Barecca's down here.
Yeah.
Like, there was no lines. We put them on our app. You know what I mean? Like, I had 4,000. And so the app was basically just a database, but I wasn't making any money. How am I going to survive? And I wasn't the type of guy, like, tech people, they just raise.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not raising money. I can't just keep going to friends and family saying, I need money. I don't know how I'm going to make money, but I need it because I want to keep this going.
Yeah.
So what I did was—
Did you have a team? Did you have a staff at this point?
Yeah, I had like 3 people working for me.
Okay.
What I did was I created a food club. And it's called Off the Menu Club.
Okay.
And basically you pay $20 a month and you got access to one free secret menu item every day at cool restaurants LA. Because my goal was to drive foot traffic to these restaurants.
Right.
Restaurant closes, 90% of restaurants close within 5 years. 60% close within the first 2 years. It's like, those are horrible stats.
Terrible, we see.
And I was like, how can I help these guys by driving foot traffic into the restaurant? And I thought through secret menu items, we could do that. And I proved to, at one time I had 4,000, paying members on my app.
Damn.
And it was like going like, I was like, oh my God, my business is going. This is amazing. And one day I woke up and Facebook changed their algorithm. And my customer acquisition cost went from $20, which was like, I was making money the second month they were on my app.
Right.
Right. Right. So I would spend $20 and get people on the app, and it was great. And I could see the growth. And then that happened and it was $80. Like, and then I was like, and then we couldn't figure it out. And that's, and you know,
was it national, by the way? Was Off the Menu national? Or?
Well, it was in Toronto, Dallas, and OC. Or sorry, LA, Dallas, and OC at the peak of it.
Okay,
and that's when they changed the algorithm, and it kind of like. But what really made me stop like having the love for Off the Menu?
Yeah.
Was the question you just asked me. Are there really enough restaurants to have secret menu items? Yeah. The answer is there are enough. But the question is, are there enough good restaurants that I want to promote? And that answer was no. Yeah. Because I got to the point where seven new restaurants a week, and there's not enough. Like, I hate to say it, there's so many amazing restaurants in LA, but there's not more than 250. You know, there just isn't.
Interesting point.
You know, so if I was to go back, and one day I will, to create that app, I would promote one restaurant a week and drive all that traffic to that one restaurant. So I was promoting things that I didn't believe in. And that's where I was like, I can't do this. Once you don't, like, as a salesperson, if you don't believe in the product,
100%,
you're screwed.
Of course, right? The passion drives it. But
what I learned about the restaurant industry is that you need to have one item that is craveable. Just one. If you look at any restaurant that's successful, from Carbone to Prince Street, they have one item that is craveable, that people want to eat more than once a week. And it was the spicy spring pepperoni pizza at Prince Street.
Yeah.
And at Carbone, it's the spicy rigatoni, right? And at In-N-Out, it's the double-double, right? So if you go back and you think about all your favorite restaurants, they have one item that probably is 60 to 80% of their sales.
Wow.
Right? And what I learned from that was like, okay, so as I was building Off the Menu, I started doing these events, because how do I get people on my club? We'll create these experiences for these people. And so I started off with the first ever Wing Fest in LA.
Okay.
And then I did the Burger Showdown. This thing was like, so the LA Times, I was on a mission in 2018. Are you going to that?
I was going to transition to this.
Well, I'll just talk about the festival, more of the festivals, but I created this thing called the Burger Showdown, and I got the Wallace Annenberg Center for Performing Arts to let me have a burger competition at their facility. That's the same place they do the Vanity Fair party. And I had Marshmello at the peak of Marshmello. Yeah, I had Tommy Lee, Shay Mitchell, Charlotte McKinney. I had Phil Rosenthal before he had his show was just coming out.
Right.
And I teamed them up with all these cool restaurant brands, and they all created secret menu items at the Burger Showdown, secret menu burgers. And it was a hit. It was a hit for the LA Food Bowl, because the LA Food Bowl, most of the stuff, I'll say this, most of their shit was like snooze. I called it the snooze fest, because it was like, just like, you know, you'd go to these, honestly, a lot of these food events, and I'll be, it's a stomach ache. You're having all these different types of food. And then you leave and you got like agita and like your stomach, and you're like, you know.
And you can't enjoy them in their natural habitat, if you will, which makes it different. We used to go to those food events, Bite Night and all this kind of stuff early, and then it turned into Food Bowl, and I'm like, nah, it's just not.
But the cool thing about what I do is I focus on one item, one thing, burgers. Chicken tenders.
Yeah.
And what happens at that festival is everyone talks about, what was the best burger? What was the best tender? Right. And it becomes like this conversation of like, you know, what was the best of that category? But I started doing these food festivals. And in 2018, I called my friend from, I would go and promote Prince Street secret menu items in New York.
Yeah.
A hockey player named Sean Avery.
Yeah. Who lives out here. And he's in our sphere. He's local. I don't want to give away too much info, but he's a local guy out here. Yeah.
And he's in the Odyssey. He's doing all these massive movies. Right. And he's been working his ass off to be an actor. He beat up three people in front of Prince Street in New York and became friends with the owners out there. And then he introduced, when I'd go and visit him in New York, he would say the best pizza in New York's Prince Street.
Hold on, you knew him from what? From the festivals? From hockey?
Playing hockey growing up.
Wow. Okay.
And so I asked Don Morano from Prince Street, hey, in 2018, do you want to come to LA for National Pizza Day and do a pop-up in LA. And he was like, let's do this.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand the how many people like Prince Street until that day. I told my publicist and she was like, oh, this is great. Let's have print. This is like, nobody's really brought a real New York pizzeria to LA in a real way. And yeah, we brought it there. I took over dough. I did my best the same way with Little Nira's. We did our best to make it feel like it was Prince Street Pizza in New York. I put all the celebrity photos up in the wall and, you know, really tried to have that thing. And man, it was insane. Literally the day we opened, there was a line like maybe 300 people deep on Sunset Boulevard. People were calling me like, what is going on? Car accidents in front of the space. Yes, and, and I was, at that point I was like, holy shit, this could really work here in LA.
Of course.
And so I flew back to New York the next week and I said, we got to open one up in LA. This is 2018. 2019, we finally make a deal. I do another pop-up in LA. It's even bigger. I do it with like pizza slime and really make it a full-on activation. And and then COVID hit. And during COVID, I did one of the biggest kind of like marketing campaigns for Uber Eats where I did my burger showdown, but I did it digitally. And I got 50 celebrities and teamed up with 50 burger joints around the world.
Virtually?
To what?
Wait, how'd you do it?
Virtually.
Yeah.
Around America to create their own off the menu burgers. And we're not talking about celebrities. Matthew McConaughey, Jason Sudeikis, Dwayne Wade, Paris Hilton, Melissa McCarthy.
And these are your hockey contacts and Hollywood contacts from way back that are helping you reach these folks. Because, I mean, how are you?
I'll tell you a story. Yeah. It was me and my team's sheer hustle. I'll give you a good example. I call Matthew McConaughey's agent. I say, hey, I'm creating this thing. I'm helping frontline workers and I'm helping the restaurant business. And I'm donating the restaurant restaurants are getting all the proceeds and then we're donating all the money to the frontline workers. And so most of the celebrities were like, yeah, this is a good thing. They're sitting at home doing nothing. Right. All they needed to do was Zoom calls with me and the chef. And that was like really it. So, I called WME and I was like, I want to get Matthew McConaughey. I know that he loves Aaron Franklin in the Franklin Barbecue in Austin. Yep. I said, it's a perfect match. I can tell you he'd love to do this. They're like, how much money do you want to pay him? I was like, I know we don't have money. I said, I've got Melissa McCarthy. I got Jason Sudeikis. We got a good group of people doing this. And they called me back and said, Matthew's passing. I was like, did you guys ask Matthew? They're like, he's passing. I was like, something sounds fishy.
Yeah.
So I call his publicist and I said, hey, this is what we're doing. She's like, Matthew's going to love this.
Yes, good.
An hour later, she calls me. Matthew's in. Matthew McConaughey did 4 Zoom calls with me.
Right.
Did like promoted it the most. Like he loved Aaron Franklin. I knew that Aaron Franklin, Matthew McConaughey, they want to work together. It makes sense. Right.
Yeah.
So I very rarely ask any of my hockey friends for any favors. That's why I'm still in the group. I never ask them for any favors, but I learned from them. Like in that group of people, the guy who started NWA, Jerry Bruckheimer, Michael Rotenberg, he started 3 Arts Entertainment, I look around the table and I'm the loser in the table, but I see how they act, how they treat people, how they treat businesses. But I want to be like them one day.
Yeah. Inspired to have those ambitions, those aspirations.
They're my mentors and they tell me about like problems. And so it's a cool thing like that. That's where but I've never really asked them for any favors.
Okay, so look, and we tend to run long here, but in the name of efficiency, let me get back. So let's talk about the time you ate 365 different burgers in 365 days. This was pre-Prince Street, post off the menu. Where did that develop? What was that?
During off the menu.
Okay, was it a promotion for off the menu? Like, what was the genesis of that, and how did that develop?
Yeah, so I'm obsessed with burgers and pizza, as everyone probably knows if you see my Instagrams. I just got engaged to my wife, who was the head of training at like Barry's Boot Camp back then. She was like the popular fitness trainer there. And I said, I was about to invest in Burgers Never Say Die. So the guy who put Burgers Never Say Die on the map is Farley Elliott.
Okay.
Who's like helped so many people.
Eater LA, right?
He was at Eater LA. Mm. And it said Secret Burger, Backyard Burger. And as soon as I saw Secret, I was there and I became friends with the guy who started it, this guy, Sean Nee, he's just like, genius burger guy in the backyard. And I was like, I'll do anything to help you get this thing opened. And, you know, it was funny. After our first meeting, he saw me pick up a piece of trash on the ground and throw it in the garbage. And at that moment, he like knew that I was a good guy. And I know everybody was asking him. I had no idea how to open a restaurant at that time. I just had off the menu, which was the business was doing well. And I was starting to gain some steam with events I was doing.
Yeah. And within the industry.
Within the industry. But I was like, I was reading these burger lists and I was like, these burger lists suck. Like, honestly, like, we all know Apple Pan's great. We all know Tommy's has got a good chili cheeseburgers. Yeah. We all know that Irv's is a legendary burger institution. Like, but I was like, nobody's really like talking about the hole in the wall burger joints and small, like these, the small ones. Yeah. So I said to my wife, I woke up and said, I'm going to eat every burger in the whole city this year. And I'm going to document.
Was it literally on some January 1st is when you started? It's like your New Year's resolution.
My New Year's resolution was reverse. Okay. I was going to go and eat every burger.
I'm probably going to gain about 40 pounds.
35 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. But my cholesterol was great at the end of it. It was my weight went up, my cholesterol didn't. Yeah. Because I was looking for the best burgers. So if you think about the best burgers, it's a good bun. It's a good piece of lettuce, tomatoes, onions, and a good piece of meat. I wasn't going to McDonald's, although I did do 1 week where I did all the gas station burgers.
Yeah.
Cause I had a burger meter. Basically my burger is a 5-bite system. So a 5-biter means you'd wait in line for an hour.
Okay.
A four biter means it's like craveable. You'd go once a week. Okay. 3-biter is like it's satisfying. And then you go 2 and 1-biter and, you know, so I had a whole bite system and, you know, it was great. I was probably one of the first people that would put like movie reels in between my burger reviews.
Yeah.
It was a real cool show. Like Casey Neistat, who's the OG like of YouTube, was like, dude, you have lightning in a bottle. You better keep doing this. I was like, I got a divorce coming my way if I keep doing this. So
wait. I got to know. So did you map it out before the year? These are the 365 I'm going to hit. Was it every day you wake up, I got to do a new one? Was it genuinely one a day? Was it sometimes 2 or 3?
Yeah, no, there were some days I would miss. I would miss some days and then I would eat 2 the next day or 3. You know what I mean? It was like, wasn't always, but for the most part, it was every single day.
How'd you figure out your order and your list?
No, I just went like I had a list because I went on the internet first to scour what everyone thought because I want to have a barometer. But the reason I did that was because burgers never say die. I put that burger in my mouth and I was like, holy fucking shit. I've never tasted anything like this. It was the first time I had a smash burger.
Yeah.
It was like a life-changing burger experience. And I wanted to know if there's anything better.
Wow.
So I would, as soon as I started putting it out there on social, people would start calling me and be like, oh, you got to try this place. You got to like, and then like, you know, the butcher shop in Manhattan Beach, next to a bar was actually making the best burgers, you know, cause it was the fresh meat and, you know, I can now look at a burger and tell you if it's, and now with the problem today with burger joints is that everybody uses a Martin's roll, a smash burger with grilled onions, and it's just every burger tastes the same.
What can I ask a question? Why are the onions mandatory on a smash burger, by the way? And I love grilled onions, I love onions, but I'm just curious, every single time it's the same components. I'm like, I don't know, sometimes I don't want grilled onions.
So Burgers Never Say Die became famous because everyone was like, oh my god, this is the way McDonald's is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And they didn't do. They did raw onions, ketchup, mustard, and cheese.
Yeah.
And but you know, the grilled onions, have you seen the movie The Menu?
Honestly, yes, but I watched it with resentment.
Okay, let me.
It's like a hater. I was like a hater on it when I was.
Irv's went viral 2 years ago when that movie came out because I did a collaboration with the movie The Menu.
Yeah,
and at the end of the movie, they're like, the perfect burger is grilled onions, 2 patties, a nice bun, and that was like the best burger. The chef, all he wanted to do was just make a burger.
Right,
they're making all these things, and we did that collaboration, and you know, because the grilled onions, and it's like the umami of a burger, right? I don't like onions. I'm personally not like onions on my burger, but it's just it's just a thing.
Okay. Aside, so go back to the burgers. This is fascinating. So, did you have some 1-bite burgers on your list?
Yeah, 7-Eleven's burger in the microwave is awful.
That one's fair. I was gonna say I don't want to like call anybody out, but that's still.
Do you want to know the worst burger?
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now. The Montage in Laguna Beach. stale brioche bun. By the way, if you have, everyone knew this about me. It's like, I hated a brioche bun unless the brioche was so fresh. It tastes like a donut.
Yeah.
Right. You had to have that salt. A bun can ruin a burger. It can make a burger.
Absolutely.
And it had a stale brioche bun. The meat was dry. I paid $40 or $35 for this burger. It was the worst. It was a one biter.
What do you think of the Big Mac? Appetitois?
Oh, awesome. But you got to eat it with a fork and knife.
It's too much for me. It's good. And I know it's a shout out Ludo, but it's too much for me. I get it and I appreciate it. But I'm not even saying it's a one bite, two bite, but it's an extravagant, different kind of thing. I was just curious.
No, it's one of those bites. Yeah. It's one of those burgers you cut in four. You have a quarter. I have a quarter. Fair. It's a table quarter. It's a split burger. Nobody's fucking eating that burger themselves and having a good day.
I've gone with people that have ordered that.
Tell me how they feel the next hour.
Fair. Okay, so burgers from there. Burgers never say die. That was your first.
Yo, correct? that was the first one.
That's when you're like, I am a restaurant owner now.
I had $50,000 in my saving account, and I put $50,000 into that business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I know they were a phenomenon. They're still one of the best around.
You know, it's so funny. We were it was us and Dave's Hot Chicken, and we were all friends. And I want to say that I was one of the first people that would bring celebrities into that parking lot back in the day. They had something special there as well. Yeah. But yeah, I invested in Burgers Never Say Die, and it was just an investment, and I would try and help. But my help for him, his philosophy was different from mine. He didn't believe in influencers. He didn't believe in giving out free food. He didn't believe in, and I embrace that in my opinion. And because that's the way I kind of grew up through this industry is that the influencers to me, that's the commercial of modern day. You know what I mean? I would rather be doing something with you than spending money on a local commercial.
Makes more sense. It's where people are. You meet people where they are, man, and authentic voices.
Exactly.
And you said, this is a quote I was going to bring up. Early, I read this, I think, in your Off the Menu era, going back on interviews, because you're starting to get surprised about, you like to spotlight local voices. And that's been your ethos ever since, basically what you just said. And I think that that's important and a good component to what you're doing when you're spotlighting a good product with local voices that are authentic. I mean, that's the winning combination. Again, going back to Little Nero's and all that kind of stuff.
But you know what's cool about Little Nero's? It's a neighborhood pizza joint. That's what it is.
Totally.
And all my businesses, I know if I want to be successful, I have to become a part of the community. And
he's there, by the way. This is how we met, because I'm always in Prince Street, but he's always in Prince Street.
I got
multiple restaurants.
Now I got 18 of them.
Somehow he's always there when I'm there. I love it.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Yeah. But okay, so Burgers Never Say Die is a success. Are you now yo, I'm a fucking restaurant investor, owner. I'm now looking for these opportunities. You have the relationship with Prince Street and the pop-up and the festivals and all that stuff. How did it come to be that you actually opened the Prince Street in LA and Prince Streets? Where did that, I know you had the relationship, but that's a big thing for them to kind of let go, not let go of, but how did that work?
So I flew down to New York and I met them at Peter Luger, the father and son that started Prince Street. And I just gave them my pitch. And I said, I think we could have one Prince Street in every major city in America. And I said, anyone that has two sports teams, we can have a Prince Street.
You're right.
Don't forget, I know nothing about expanding a business, especially a food business. But, they looked at me and they said, where are you from? I was like, well, Canada. They're like, no, we know that. But are you what part of Italy? I said, oh, I'm from Calabria. Me too. What part of Calabria? Cosenza. I was like, he shook my hand. He said, we got a deal. And I was like, yeah, I was like, this is amazing. And he said, Lawrence, don't change your fucking recipe. Can I swear? Sorry.
Yeah.
And he said, never lose the human touch. Your customers, I started Prince Street. I just wanted to feed the community.
Yeah.
That's it. I just wanted to feed the community. I felt like I could. And what separates Prince Street is that we use pasta sauces on our pizza. Yeah. Every other pizzeria puts on tomato sauce and then let the sauce cook in the oven.
Yeah.
We actually like cook our sauces every day, fresh daily. So like that's really, other than the dough, and is what separates us. But that was it. And I think he looked at me and like, he had so many people asking to expand Prince Street. And there are these suit guys and investment bankers and like people like that. But I think when he looked at me, he was like, okay, I see this kid can actually, he's got the heart and soul and he'll figure it out. And, you know, we did. We opened it up during COVID, which was insanely difficult to do.
Wow.
From construction to opening to rules and regulations. Like, as you know, I hate to say this, but LA doesn't make it easy on a business.
We discussed that a lot on this show. I wanted to dive into that too. I don't know if we have time, but you're right. Keep going. But you powered through though.
But we powered through it. We opened it up in November 2020.
It was like COVID year, actually. I didn't remember that.
Oh, yeah. I was on the, like, literally on the front lines. I remember Curate called me and said, we got the first vaccine. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I was like, I went to my team. We got the vaccines. Let's go. I was like, this is like, man, how crazy we were back then. But, we opened it up and I had a line and two zip codes. It literally, like, we had, and I say that because we are literally on the edge of West Hollywood and Beverly Hills, but it sounds good. Two zip codes.
Yeah.
The line went to the Beverly Hills sign. And I remember a picture being like at the front of Prince Street all the way to the Beverly Hills sign. I was like, this is fucking amazing. And at that moment, you're like, man, you did something really cool. And LA's got an unbelievable pizza scene right now. Yeah. Like it is so good. I can like very, and I really want to say that like, not that I'm responsible for any of it, but I feel like I was the first one that brought a quality pizza to LA. Like, cause when we opened up in 2020, I think Pizzano was open and they had a good product. Mulberry was on its way down. Oh, I loved Mulberry pizza, but it was on its way down and there was like DeSano's. There wasn't really like great pizza in LA. That was
the bane of LA's culinary food existence.
Prime was out there, but Prime was like, and I'm sure they'll admit this, they were just a ripoff of Prince Street, but in LA. Like, great. And I love Prime. By the way, don't get me wrong. And I don't want to like talk, but they were just a ripoff of Prince Street in LA. And so
they were inspired.
Inspired.
Inspired by Prince Street.
Sorry, not a ripoff, but it's inspired. Yeah. And by the way, I'm a fan. That was my go-to pizza before I opened up Prince Street.
Okay.
And, so there wasn't really the scene that there is today. And today there's some knockout pizzerias like in LA that
shout out Lasorda's, by the way, my boy.
Lasorda's is good. That the Sunny's ones looks unbelievable. Like there people are really putting like, you know, and Pizza Say, you know, and listen, Nancy Silverton was making pizza, but like the Neapolitan style pizza and like everybody was making that pizza, Blaze pizza, Mod pizza. Like you were getting those style pizzas, you know, nobody had brought in that New York Sicilian style.
No, it's no secret that LA was hungry for good pizza for generations. I mean, like there are places, So
when that happened, it was like, it was cool. And we just, like I said, at the end of the day, I wanted to fit into the community. I want to be a part of the community. And so when we opened Studio City and I started picking communities, I thought that would be good in LA to be a part of.
Yeah.
And it was hard to open up during COVID.
Well, you nailed it on that. Okay. Let's get to Irv's real quick. Legendary Route 66 history. I did an episode on Irv's. Irv's probably my favorite patty melt in LA, but great burgers. How'd you get involved in that? Because that was such a legacy historical spot. I know the previous owner, I think Sonia Hong was her name.
Sonia.
She got closed. It had closed for a while and kind of reopened. Tell me the story, how you got involved there. And I know you like had a relationship with her. Like it was a very amicable handover or purchase or what was
absolutely. I mean, so on my burger tour, first week, Irv's Burgers was one of my, I hit the Irv's Burgers.
Yeah.
And I, at the time I had no money. Like I said, I dumped all my money into Burgers Never Say Die at that time. And, but she was, Save Irv's was happening again. And man, this burger, she was like such an amazing part of the community. And Irv's Burgers, you know, it was started off as a burger stand in 1946.
Yeah.
And then Irv's, it was called Queenie's Burgers.
Yeah.
And then in 1970 became Irv's Burgers with this legendary restaurateur, Irv's Genghis. I say legendary in West Hollywood. And all the rock stars and actors would hang out at Irv's and The Clash and Janis Joplin and everybody was there. And it was like the cool spot in the 70s. 70s, 80s, and even George Motz wrote about it in Burger America. But in, by 2018, a family business, an immigrant family business, the Hongs, unfortunately, the son, the Sean passed away and Mama Hong was getting older and the father had passed away. And Sonia just couldn't run the business anymore. And in 2018, she shut it down. At that, in 2020, I was looking for new locations for Prince Street, and Jay Lux, world famous.
He's everywhere in LA. His name's plastered throughout.
He was my agent who found my Prince Street and all my, you know, and my, my locations. And he said, Lawrence, you got to help me with a spot. I'm trying to figure out a tenant for this place. And I was like, what place? And he takes me to it. And I was like, oh my God, this is Irv's Burgers.
Yeah.
And I said, Jay, we have to bring back Irv's Burgers. And he was like, what are you talking about? I was like, oh, hold on. And I called Sonia. I said, Sonia, I want to bring, because every week I'd call her and I'd be like, Sonia, you want to do a pop-up with off the menu? I was like, let's do an Irv's Burgers pop-up. People will love it. So I called her. I said, Sonia, I want to open up Irv's. I'm going to give you all the money to open up Irv's. At this point now I'm doing better and I have some money to throw into another venture. And I said, let's open up Irv's and I'll give you the money and you can just pay me back whenever. I'm not going to give you like some sort of deal or terms. You pay me back and you can run the business. She's like, I don't want to run the business anymore. She's like, I'll work for you, but I don't want to run the business. I said, okay, how much do you want for it? And I wrote her a check that day for the business. And the business had nothing. She didn't have a lease. She doesn't no recipe books. She didn't like, she, God love her. She was all personality and all heart.
Correct.
And that was enough. Like I tell people all the time that you don't have to, like I say, have the best product. That is the best marketing thing. But even if you have a good product and you deliver great customer service, we'll go back. You know, if you say, come and say, Hey, Evan, you know, I got your order ready. You feel like a part of that restaurant. Like that is that really will bring the community back.
And people feel the passion and the heart, man. They really do. Like cooking with love is a real thing. It's a real ingredient, man. Like people get that. It may be intangible, but it matters and people know it and they feel it and they taste it. Irv's comes back. How's the successful? I mean, every time there are people there, it's good.
Yeah. So my angel in Irv's is a guy named Brad Slater, who is the probably, I want to say I think he's the best agent in Hollywood.
Okay.
He represents The Rock and Kim Kardashian and Dana White and the list goes Addison Rae and the list goes on, you know, and I called him up because he was a local, talk about the community. He was a local LA guy born and raised here. And I said, I bought the rights to Irv's and I'm going to, you know, and I'm raising some money. He's like, oh, this is amazing. And he literally rounded up a bunch of local cool people and that all invested in Irv's. And we've been growing the brand and I'm learning, you know, from the ups and downs of scaling in different locations and, you know, just navigating through, like, you know, it's tough to open up in West Hollywood with, like, you know, it's, I don't want to go say what my staff has to go through with, like, the homeless people and everything. It's like, it's sad on both fronts. And it's truly, you know, you always, you know, you want the safety of your employees and your customers.
100%.
And so with Irv's, it's just like at the end of the day, what we are is like what my vision for Irv's is the all American burger stand. No frills, great product, great value. You see like all these other burger, like In-N-Out's burger patty is 1.8 ounces. Irv's Burgers, 4 ounces.
Is that a fact?
Yeah. Oof. Oh yeah. It's a small little patty. Yeah. You know what I mean? And Irv's pound for pound is the best burger, pound per price, the best burger in America. The only one that beats us, McDonald's frozen patty. Pound for like 4 ounces for the value. I have a $5.50 burger. At 4 ounce patty. So that's for Irv's. That's what we strive to be and we opened up in Vegas.
Yeah.
And they love us in Vegas.
Shout out to what's her name? Raised in Vegas.
Yeah.
Good feed over there. And you did a collab with her.
Yeah. The Hangover
for the breakfast burger. Yeah. Shout out. She's good creator.
Yeah.
I'm a Vegas guy. I mean, I'm an LA guy, but dad was a boxing manager, grew up going to Vegas every month. I feel like Vegas is my backyard. Feel in LA that it is all of our backyard. Everybody's taking those road trips. So I love Vegas. Okay. We're running out. I just need to a couple comments. Talk to me about Tacos 1986.
Well, I'm just an investor there. I was there when I think one of the first nights when they opened up on Highland in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And I just had that taco. I was like, this is good. And Joy and Victor, they got so much charisma.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get behind them and be a part of their journey.
Now, is it safe to say that they're trying to take, or they are taking, like the street taco? I'm making a change. Like, what's the vision there? Like, tell me about tacos. Because it is like the Tijuana style tacos, right? Street tacos, but it's also like a taco street truck vibe, but in a brick and mortar, right?
They want to be that neighborhood taco stand, okay. And they were just wanted that neo. Then they're bringing that Tijuana style taco to LA, and I think that that's their goal too, is just to be as good as they can be in every neighborhood that they open up in.
Okay. And now, last but not least, Tenderfest. And tell me what's coming in 2026 with Tenderfest.
Oh, this is amazing. We're in the midst of doing a deal. So Tenderfest is the world's largest chicken tender competition. And another local, John Terzian, who's like a legend in his own right, who started H-Wood Group from like, you know, Bootsy Bellows and Delilah and the Nice Guy. He's the godfather of nightlife and literally the most connected person in Hollywood. Like, okay. And when he came to my Wing Fest and said, Lawrence, I got something better. I was like, what's that? He's like, we got to do Tenderfest. And I was like, that's a good idea because Wing Fest, there was Wing Fest in Buffalo.
Yeah.
And I like to be original. And, you know, so I didn't continue on with Wing Fest, even though it was a huge success. And I said, you know what? That's a brilliant idea. And we took Tenderfest. We did the first one in 2019 at the Wallace Annenberg Center for Performing Arts. We had Wolfgang Puck, Nancy Silverton, Tim Hollingsworth, and Chris O. all creating chicken tenders. Dude. I had Raising Cane's before anyone knew who Raising Cane's was in LA. They're massive on the East Coast. But and it was an amazing night where they have the Vanity Fair Oscar party. It was that kind of that high-low event, and we had cocktail waiters in bow ties and suits and serving tenders, and people loved it. And so we've done four of them, but you know, we don't make any money on it. It's like, you know, I mean, if anything, we've made money on one or two of them, and we've lost money on two of them. And it's just a labor of love. But we are like, we are all getting so busy where we're like, we either have to go full in on this or we can't keep doing it. And obviously, if you know me and John Terzian, it's all in. So we're partnering up with this group, and we're doing Tenderfest in 8 cities. And it's going to all
2026,
and it's all going to culminate in LA for the Tender Bowl. And, so we're going to do all media behind it. And it's not just going to be a Tenderfest on tour. We're going to have tender chicken tender reviews and between a segment called Between Two Tenders and, you know, things like we're just like really owning the chicken tender world, because chicken is the fastest growing segment, and there's no media or no real like thing that's like driving it, like in terms of like I say this, I want to be the Michelin of tenders.
What are your favorite tenders? What are some, just shout out a couple of your favorite tenders,
right? Le Coop is probably one of the best chicken tenders in the city. Wow. And the box, they won the People's Choice Award of Tenderfest this year. Yeah. Incredible tenders. They're like a katsu chicken tender on a stick. You got to go if you haven't tried it. Have you tried Le Coop?
No,
never. Best tried chocolate chip cookies. And that's not me saying that. They won best chocolate chip cookie in LA.
What do you put on your tenders, by the way?
You mean sauce? Yeah. Sauce? It really depends. Because it depends on, no, it depends on, is it an actual hot tender? Is it a Korean style tender? When you learn about these foods, and there's so many different segments. If you say, what's your best burger? Well, that's not fair. Do you want my best smash burger? Do you want my best restaurant burger? Do you want my best thick burger? Do you want my, you know what I mean? There's so many. And it's same with pizza, right? If you said to me, what's your best pizza in LA? Well, you got Apollonia's, you got Pizzeria Say. If you, Sicilian at Prince Street, you got all these different style pizzas. So like, they're all different,
and they're,
you know,
different categories.
It's a different category.
Okay, but what are some of your favorite
Favorite tenders?
Yeah,
favorite.
Give me Well, here's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
How was Pioneer? Wasn't Pioneer first entrance this year, right?
No, they were there 2 years ago. Okay. And I love Ernie at Pioneer. What a great kid.
Awesome. And great family.
And great local brand. I really like, that's a brand you want to see come back. And they are coming back.
They just had a pop up in the Valley. That's my favorite fried chicken. The fried chicken, LA's fried chicken, by the way.
I love it. And you know what's unique about them is that... Nothing tastes like Pioneer.
Correct.
It's unique.
Yeah.
And that separates them.
They're awesome. Pioneer, hopefully. I know Bell Gardens, Boyle Heights, hopefully they keep coming back. Okay, last thing, and it's a big thing. Talk about the LA restaurant industry. You know how tough it is, but you succeed. Somehow, are you creating a roadmap? What is it that against all these odds, the regulations, the taxes, the cost of goods, how are you making it work in LA? And what is the outlook to for restaurants that you seem to have the golden touch?
I think it's details. You gotta watch your food cost. You gotta watch your labor. You gotta treat your staff well. You know, that's a big thing. It's really about building that right culture inside of your business as well. And, you know, just like focusing on making sure the quality of the product is always good. It to be successful, you have to be good at almost at everything nowadays. You have to be a good marketer. You have to have a great product. You have to be good. You have to be a great operator. Right. And those are the things that you can't just be good at one thing anymore. You got to be able, because even if you were just had a great product, but had terrible customer service, there's so much competition out there that we're just going to go and find something else, especially in LA. As you were saying, like why is anyone going to go to the LA Bowl?
LA Bowl, RIP LA Bowl. It was fun, but.
So there's so much competition in LA, but like, you know, I don't want to get into like any political rant, but it's the LA business, they make it really tough on businesses to make it. Like, and like, just to like, you know, this is the one thing that like change the goddamn ADA rules. Like if I make if there's a problem with one of my tables or my doors, give me a week, maybe even 24 hours to fix it before you lawyers slap a like $15,000 fee. And there's these lawyers that go around to restaurant and just look for problems to sue you.
Seen that.
So now I'm lucky enough that like, you know, margins are very tight on restaurants and like I can handle a lawsuit because knock on wood, I have a good business that can handle that stuff. But man, a mom and pop, they get one or two of those lawsuits a year. Yeah. They're done. Why isn't the government stepping in and making and saying, yo, you, if you're suing somebody 30 times a year, it's a little much. Like right. there's a racket there, you know, and like help us out a bit. And not even to say like the red tape with all like the permitting and, you know, getting things through. And it's already hard enough. The restaurant industry is already hard enough. Why is the LA business making it even harder on them?
Man, I mean, we've had Risha Lopez on, Christy Vega, and that's a common refrain. So, I mean, there's so many, you're making it work, but again, the mom and pops who are scraping together and this is their dream and the restaurant is everything, man, to have some potential land.
Let me tell you this. Yeah. I get calls every day. Some of the best restaurateurs in America do not want to come to LA. That sucks. Why I can't have a Carbone in LA because of, you know, they don't want to open up, you know what I mean? It's like, they're not that saying that, you know, but right, Carbone right. in LA would be amazing. Yeah. But there's people that are really talented. LA is the best place in the world.
Damn
the
right.
best place
Greatest
in the world.
Greatest city on the globe. Absolutely.
Let it be easy to operate or a little easier to operate a business, right?
Well, man, you're somehow weaving through the potential pratfalls to make it work. And we are very thankful, whether it's Prince Street, by the way, go through the 21st. It's Little Nero's. It is worth it. It is a spectacle. And here's a cool thing that I didn't even mention. When you're outside, there's still stuff to do and enjoy and like send the kids to the car and like take the pictures and all that stuff. Even while it's a line, like it's an adventure. It's fun. So go there. Tacos 1986. Herbs, hit up Herbs. Get that patty melt. We'll get the details on Tenderfest.
I was going to say Bar Next Door. It's winning all these awards.
Bar Next Door. One of the best bars. Was it in America or the world?
North America.
Yes. One of North America's best 100 bars. And it is so cool. What's the mixologist there?
Bryn Smith.
Bryn. I was going to say Bree. She's so awesome. So knowledgeable. And makes an awesome, awesome... Look, I'm usually a tequila and soda guy, straight up. Just double tequila soda, frankly, with a twist of lime. But she makes these awesome beverages that are named, you know, that harken back to the golden age of Hollywood. And it's a good place, and it's like being in that golden age of Hollywood without trying too hard. It's comfortable. It's a neighborhood bar. So shout out Bar Next Door. I want to know why you got in the bar biz. But listen, just go to any of these places. These are stalwarts of L.A., as is Lawrence Longo. And thank you so much for being here, man. Really appreciate this talk and appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was like a dream to come on. I was wondering, I was like, one day I hope to be on this show. So this is like, you made my day.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah. Well, awesome. Everybody listening, go check out Little Nero's through the 21st. But have a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, and a Happy New Year. And we will see you in 2026. All right, y'all. It's been a minute.